Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today, I'm really excited to have with me via Zoom, Julio Martinez. Julio gave up his dream of becoming a paella chef and instead has launched four fintech products, culminating in founding Abacum, an automation tool for FP&A professionals, which has raised over $30 million and that he wishes he had built during his 20 plus years in finance. Julio, really great to have you here on the podcast with me.
Such a privilege. Thank you so much for having me here today. This is going to be a blast.
Yeah, no, I think we've got a lot to talk about, certainly if our kind of pre-podcast conversation is anything to go by. So look, let's dive straight in. What was your first job?
Hey, my first job was a bartender when I was 15. So literally the first job. It was very fun. But I think probably more relevant today is that, you know, I of course transitioned into finance, right? And most of my career was and has been in finance, in operational roles, also investment banking, across different geographies. I think I also wanted to explore, you know, working in different corners of the world, only to then transition into tech. So I transitioned into tech, started building fintech products, so again, very much focused on finance. So, yeah. This boring guy, I guess, but launched four fintech products to market from scratch, lots of traction. And then I came across the Abacum opportunity. So the rest is history. And hopefully we can also deep dive later.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think bartending is super interesting, actually. I mean, like a lot of the guests that we've had on have had, you know, jobs in, you know, we've had people worked at McDonald's as I did or in supermarkets. You're actually the first person who's mentioned bartending at 15, no less. So this tells me that must have been in Europe because nowhere else in the world are you going to be a bartender at the age of 15. Maybe Argentina, but I could be wrong. But it teaches you so much about kind of customer facing stuff, right? How to deal with people, how to serve them, how to deal with cash and making change and thinking on your feet. I think there's a lot to be said about doing those roles when you're younger. But so, you know, you mentioned obviously you worked in finance before building these sort of fintech businesses. So what was it that actually triggered your move into building startups? This season of Nothing Ventured is proudly sponsored by Emerge One. Emerge One provides fractional CFO support to venture-backed tech startups and scale-ups. They work with businesses from seed to Series B that have been backed by some of the UK, US, and Europe's best venture capital funds. They provide support from capital allocation and management, KPIs and reporting, fundraising support, financial modeling, investor relations, and investor management. Come check them out at emergeone.co.uk when you're scaling fast and have need of a CFO.
I was given the awesome opportunity to start leading this fintech venture builder. So I transitioned from actually evaluation and analyzing software companies and, you know, also launched some internal initiatives that were highly entrepreneurial. But all of a sudden, I was building product and building small companies from scratch serially. And guess what? I found my passion, right? So I think that going early and actually building from scratch, cracking those early problems and, you know, making it happen with your own hands and, you know, end to end, right? So end to end, you know, how building startups is, right? So end to end, like high stakes, high accountability, it became a passion of mine. But that had to be combined with a problem space that I understood very well. Mm-hmm. and then also a mission that meant something extremely relevant for me before I, you know, launched, you know, Abacom as a company. So I think that having spent so much time in finance, I think FP&A, strategic finance, and some of those automation topics that probably we'll discuss later, mm-hmm. you know, that was a space I understood quite well, having lived those pains myself. In operational roles, but actually then also building fintech from scratch. Like, you know, those companies were growing fast and you know, I was seeing some of the shortcomings that the finance function had. At the same time, I've been in finance for a long time, right? And I pushed very hard in my career to make finance more prevalent, more relevant in organizations. And something I see a lot, but definitely care about a lot, is, you know, most of my friends are in finance as well, right? So again, you know, this boring guy, but you know, this is my world. And I care about the success of finance teams. What I see a lot is, you know, finance people that are extremely ambitious, determined, and obviously high education, masters in finance, MBAs, like all these, you know, fancy titles, a lot of effort, a lot of money put into your own education, but then that translates into a day-to-day.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it's very mundane and very miserable. So like making them the hero in your organization, unleashing their power, like making finance, today finance is the most under-leveraged function in the company.
100%.
You're really transitioning that to an impactful role, like, you know, a mission I want to accomplish.
It's crazy. I mean, I think you described it really well, right? There is a high bar to kind of work in finance, right? You have to do, whether that's getting an accounting qualification, CFA training, whatever it might be, right? Like there is a lot you have to do to get in. But once you get in there, it is a very, very routine. It can be a very routine, boring job, because not because the job in itself is routine or boring, but it's made so because people don't actually understand the opportunity that having a great kind of finance function in your business can really offer. I mean, like, certainly it's what we think about a lot, you know, with the work that we do as CFOs in early stage businesses, right? Yep. And I think, you know, that point that it is the most under-leveraged unit in a business is exactly right. And especially if you look at today, you know, the where the markets are, where interest rates are, you know, do you have a treasury function? Are you managing your kind of FX flows in the right way? Are you, we saw the collapse of SVB. Are you managing your kind of cash in a way that is sensible for your business? These are questions that I think lots of founders and lots of companies don't think about, because it's sort of treated as a back office, like, okay, well, it's stuff that needs to be done. It just gets done. Whereas actually it has strategic value. So, you know, on that point, I guess, like, so I've tried to build in this space, and I, you know, came across a number of challenges, and one of them being it's very hard to service, you know, a market as broad as the one that finance offers, right? Because you could build a product that may work for a niche but doesn't work across kind of multiple businesses. So let's talk about Abacom. Like, who is it for? What does it do? You know, give me the background about Abacom and kind of who is the user for that product.
Yeah, let's double click there, because you're totally right. Finance, I will then talk about later, you know, the dispersion of use cases is very wide, right? The entropy is very difficult to accommodate. So we are really targeting the mid market. So down market in smaller companies, we don't see enough pain to solve for financial planning and analysis, which is what we do. The enterprise, you know, it's a different game, legacy players, we can double click later. The mid-market for us is companies from, say, 100 employees to 600 employees. Mm-hmm. So really narrowing down, and employees is just a proxy, right? So sure. The same as revenue, but, you know, narrowing down about the use cases that the FP&A has, right? So financial planning and analysis for us is enabling these guys, finance teams, to really empower the company with efficient growth. So that means having operational KPIs, very important, and financials real time at your fingertips, is being able to do budgeting, forecasting, reforecasting, and scenario planning on the fly, right? Very fast, combining this accurate data that has been all automated for you. And also the third pillar is, how do you engage with the rest of the stakeholders, right? So for us, the platform is really engaging with different geographies, different teams, you know, making it collaborative and generating these workflows that really, you know, allow finance to impact the company. So in terms of industries, you know, this is where we cover a lot of ground, given the amount of flexibility we've built into the product. So we do fintech, we do mobility, we do SaaS, we do marketplaces, we do private equity backed companies. We have listed companies as customers as well, with heavy regulation as well. So this is where, you know, the product is able to cover a lot of ground, but we solve for what we understand is the core mid market.
Yeah, no, look, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that is, I think you hit on the problem exactly right. Like, so when I was building, as an example, the product I built was perfect for early stage founders and they loved it. The problem is they have no money. They don't want to pay. And it's just not big enough, right? It's too fragmented. You don't have that recurring revenue. And then the further up you go, the more complicated, or the more problems your product needs to solve, which is what it sounds like you've done with Abacom. And you know, one of the things, I guess, that we'll get into down the track, maybe, but, you know, just geeking out from a kind of finance perspective, one of the things that I always say, and I think all finance people say, is like, if you have garbage going in, you have garbage coming out. So one of the problems that I see a lot of with smaller businesses that don't have sophisticated finance teams is they assume that tech can solve all their problems.
Yeah.
It can do a lot of the heavy lifting, but if you don't have the right stuff going into it, you're never going to have this. You're never going to have the right outputs coming out, right? Would you agree with that?
I fully agree with that, actually, and I think, this is why we defend or typically propose, and this doesn't apply to 100% of the companies out there, but you know, we propose that CFOs or the finance function agglutinates data. Mm-hmm. And this is why, right? So I think modern CFOs have data analytics, the data function, the data warehouse under their responsibility, precisely for the very reason that you are pointing at. What are they going to be doing if they don't control the quality of that data? How are you supposed to be adding value to the business if you are always dependent on a data scientist?
Yeah.
And let's face it, out there, we don't believe, you know, most of finance professionals I know, you know, they are not going to be coding Python, and some of them are, you know, we are getting more proficient here and there, but you know, it's a different function. It's just data analytics, but we believe that you maximize the impact when you merge them together.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And obviously, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now with Python, with Excel having integrated Python into their product. I think that's a potential game changer. I think what is likely to happen is you'll have a very niche kind of core group of users who will get a lot of functionality out of that. But I think exactly to your point, the vast majority, certainly of older school, and I think you and I are probably in that older school category of kind of finance pros, right? But like, we're not necessarily going to go out and reskill. I've learned Python to an extent. Could I build a product? No. Could I possibly tinker in Excel? Maybe. Don't know. But you know, I'm not proficient enough, certainly at this level, to be able to do any major damage. But I think maybe the younger guys, as they come up, who are digitally native, who are thinking about code first, possibly even thinking about no code first, right? Like, they are the people that potentially will kind of come into those products and maybe get better value. But that's a generational shift that is going to take sort of 5, 10, 15 years maybe, right? Yeah. So just as we close off the primer, because I'm keen to get into some of these wider questions, can you tell me about maybe two or three of the investors that you've worked about that you really have enjoyed, loved having on board with Abacom or any of the previous kind of businesses, and why was that?
Totally. I think, investors, one cannot underestimate them. And I think we are very privileged to have, I can flesh out our current board members. And I think we are very fortunate and very privileged. We have Creandum, Atomico, and KFan in our board, and also profounders here based in London. So yeah, different geographies and different types of fund. But hey, we have Peter Spech in our board. You know, he's just the best investor to have by your side, right? And what I really value of him is that he really operates at light speed. And he gets things done like there is no tomorrow, right? So I can literally ping him. I'm based in New York, right? So I can literally ping him you know, 11 at night, whenever, right? Weekends. And he's going to be there proactively helping and coming out from very high conviction. So, you know, he's shown to us that he's there during good times and bad times, right? And that, you know, that matters a lot. And also something that he has is the capacity to distinguish very well what is important and what matters and what not, right? Because then if you go to the SaaS napkin, you see many, you know, it's very classic, oh, but this and that, like understanding the fundamental of your business, where you are and what are the trade-offs, very important. So he's got that skill. Then we also work with Therese Howard, and she's amazing, right? She's a partner at Atomico, super strong. She comes with a lot of insight. She comes with a lot. She's an strategist, so and she's done a lot of. She was investing in the Valley for 4 years, and she comes with that strategic mindset, more kind of growth mentality, and something that I really respect is that she pushes us to be thinking ahead of ourselves, right? So she is anticipating what's coming and asking all these painful questions that we don't really know, to be frank, the answer for, but she's, you know, front loading guys like, you know, how are you thinking of that? I'm not sure.
We haven't thought about it yet, but maybe we should, yeah.
Yeah, totally. But that's very, very relevant, you know, maybe 9 months on the line or 12 months on the line. So that is, you know, pushing us to get out of our, you know, more day to day, super relevant. She brings all this wealth of strategic insights into the conversation. And then we also work with Sergio Alvarez Leiva. He's a product wizard, right? So he's a founder himself. He's founded very successful companies, you know, exited some of them, and he's a product wizard, and actually particularly around B2B SaaS and database products. Mm-hmm. So he was actually our first institutional investor, and he comes with this wealth of experience of scaling these companies, both in the US and Europe. He's got backed by Axel and, you know, all this insight and all these amazing investors. And he brings all these, you know, I've built a lot of database products. I understand data inside out. And obviously that's very core to what we do. So he's brought a lot of, he's an engineer, but also a designer. So he's brought a lot of a well-rounded understanding on how we should be approaching a data complex product.
Amazing. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, has always been a question on many founders' minds is like, do I take, you know, smart capital, or do I take dumb capital, or do I just, you know, or just capital, as it were? Like, I would always advocate for the smart capital, right? Because exactly as you described, if you've got people at the end of the phone, you know, on WhatsApp or whatever, they're proactively working with you to build a business, and who can step outside exactly as you described, right? Who are looking at it from, you know, a 100-foot view rather than in the weeds, so they can see what's going on around in the ecosystem, in the marketplace, you know, outside of, you know, what you're going through on the day-to-day, right? On the day-to-day, you're dealing with hiring, firing, building product, you know, figuring out what's broken in the code, what technical debt do you need to solve, et cetera, like all of these things. What does the product need to look like? How to sell more, right? Like, but those are things that keep the business going, but how does a business grow? Where does a business go? That's where kind of that strategic input, I think, is massively, massively important. So yeah. I think it's great that you've got kind of partners on your board or even just like, you know, at the end of the phone, as I say, that you can lean on, because I think many founders struggle with that, especially if they're solo founders, right? Where they don't have the benefit of a co-founder to kind of lean on and explore some of those questions with. And obviously, as businesses grow, you tend to have one founder anyway taking the lead, as it were, et cetera. I just think that's massively valuable. And obviously having those backgrounds can only add value, right? Like that's the bottom line. Julio, listen, absolutely awesome having you on so far. I can tell that the main podcast is going to be a blast. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
I'm having a blast. Thank you so much for having me.